Welcome back to Niaga Awani with me, Ibrahim Sani, and my colleague Haritz. We're going to be talking about some of the key developments in the market. We start off with the KLCI. Currently, the KLCI is trending upwards at 1536 points, or up 5 points, or about 0.33%. We're looking at some of the gainers, including that of Synergence. It is currently not moving, trending sideways at 58 cents. That's coming up very shortly. But some of the key developments that we can talk about would also include the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference that is going to happen, confirmed, on June 6 and 10. This developers conference is going to be focusing on some of the areas on services. So Apple, of course, is part of the tech stocks that have been trending downwards, touching very briefly $3 trillion, but currently is about $2.4 trillion. They are no longer the world's largest company, or the world's most expensive company in the world. Of course, you can see that Apple is, of course, trending downwards as well. Back to the local boss. We're looking at some of the key markets right now, including Petronas Dagangan, Petronas Chemicals. PETDAG is up 14 cents to 21 cents. PCAM, or Petronas Chemical, is up 6 cents to 10 ringgit. And of course, Sapura Energy, that has been, I guess, in the news very recently. They are not moving at 8 cents. Moving along, we go back to the whole idea of Penang-based electronics manufacturing solutions provider, Synergence Berhad. They made a firm debut on the ACE market on Bursa Malaysia on Tuesday yesterday, emerging as one of the most traded actively stocks on the local boss. Commenting on the group's IPO, Synergence independent non-executive chairman, Dato' Azman Mahmud, said that he is confident that the group will continue its growth trajectory, enhancing its market presence and operations through its future expansion and development plans. As mentioned earlier this morning, Synergence is at 58 cents. Joining us online right now is Mr. Lai Yin Choi, the chief executive officer, as well as the executive director of Synergence. Lai, thanks for taking the time to speak with us this morning. I want to know more about the idea of Synergence. Where do you guys head towards the future? Perhaps I want to nitpick on some of the ideas that you mentioned yesterday during the IPO launch, including that of developing mobile phones, developing semiconductor chips. Where do you think the future lie when it comes to the tech sector of Malaysia, Lai?
Currently, if you look at the landscape right now, the moving trend for this is actually the electric vehicles, whereby you are able to, you need to address the power and also the battery, the issue that is facing in the electric vehicles right now. So if you go to a dealer right now to buy electric cars, I think the first question you will ask is that how long can the car drive with a single charge. Right now, you'll probably be getting around 300 to 400 kilometers as a normal. And with the advancement in terms of the battery tech and also the control, the power modules, we are looking at the range of probably 600 to 700 range in terms of the drive range per charge. So in order to do that, there will be a lot of new revolution technology that will be coming out. And to address that is that a lot of this is you have to control in a way that if you use a normal operators to handle automotive product, it's actually a no-no, because they would prefer no touch line. No touch line meaning is that everything has to be fully automated and everything has to be fully traceability have to be complete, because all these data of productions have to be kept by the manufacturer, so that they have to ensure that they're compliant to the safety standard of the automotive. So this is just one part of the growing industries that is driving the electronics market right now. And another one is if you look at the 5G. So 5G is actually moving on right now very aggressively especially in Malaysia itself, and also our neighboring countries. And you can see that there's a lot of devices is going to change, because going 5G's right now, the speed is extremely fast, and you can do a video download in just a few seconds, and everything is downloaded. So in order to achieve that type of speed, the devices that have to be redesigned based on the 5G network and also the 5G's technology. So with that being said, there will be a lot of investment going on the CAPEX itself to enhance this 5G introduction into the market. And as you can see, recently there's been a few so-called big players, technology players have been already initiated investment into Malaysia. You have all these new so-called substrate players, advanced substrate players, which usually they manufacture those in the other countries. Right now, this choosing Malaysia as the investment base to start up their factories. So their factories will be commencing operational probably next year or 2 years from now. And they'll be supplying all these high-tech modules that uses the SMT process. And they will use this advanced module to become intelligent chips. So these intelligent chips will then be mounted onto the PCBA, and they will be using it to power a lot of modules, especially the IoTs and all these mobile gadgets. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Lai, with the businesses risk rising, Ukraine war, shortage of semiconductors, supply chain issues, and of course, other geopolitical risks, will this impact your business in the near term, Lai?
If you look at the geopolitical situation right now, it demanded more of the smart factory solution. Because to address the global shortages and also the labor shortages that we are facing right now, raw material shortages. So everything that you produce have to be very efficient and very optimized. Okay, just to give you one example is that if you go into a production floor, let's say in a factory, a manufacturing environment, and if you're able to know everything is on the production floor, every data you're able to collect from the system, then you will be ahead of the game, because having those data will ensure that your production, you know what is the shortages that you're facing, you know what is the labor that is requirement, and so-called process capability that you have right now. So if you want to produce something, you have to know what you have and what you can produce at a point of time. So I quote you one example. We have one client actually did very well during the COVID pandemic. Because they have faced a lot of, they're running very high mix production, even some very small lots, which they run 50 pieces and they have to change a new model. So they were actually using the smart factory solution. And what they are able to do during the pandemic time, during the shortages, they're able to know upfront, right before the production, they were able to know upfront what can they run today without even guessing. Okay, they just need to click on their system and they'll be able to know what they're able to run. So during the pandemic where there's a lot of shortages, so certain models that they have shortages, they plan it out so that they bring it down, so they run it later. So whatever they have, they're going to run it immediately. So that actually ensures smooth production transition. So this enhances the so-called adaptability and the able to counter the shortfall that actually other subcontractors are having. So it basically enhances their reputation and their earnings during this pandemic. And for going forward to address all these shortages and material shortages, if you are able to control all this with very high yield, you'll be able to produce more with less, right? So this less wastages means you will have an improved bottom line. So this is what our expertise are in the market that we're actually helping our clients. Yeah.
Thank you. That was Lai Yin Choi, the CEO and Executive Director at Synergence Berhad. Be sure to watch my formal and long conversation with Lai Yin Choi and Synergence on Notepad. That is airing this Monday evening at 10:30 p.m. That's Synergence. They have just got listed on the ACE market. yesterday, and of course currently it's trending at about 57 cents. A target fuel mechanism will be implemented soon as the government cannot continue to pay a blanket subsidy due to a sharp jump in fuel pricing. The government's total fuel subsidy bill is currently expected to be 28 billion ringgit for the whole of 2022, a sharp rise from the 11 billion ringgit bill in 2021. This was revealed by MITI senior minister Datuk Sri Azmin Ali during a press conference in the US this week, where he is currently on a trade and investment promotion mission. The issue here is complex. In fact, the mechanism perhaps needs to be unfolded further or explained further to the public. To help us unpack this is Professor Dr. Jeffrey Williams, economist at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology, MUST. He is also the Provost for Research and Innovation at MUST. Dr. Jeffrey, simple, plain and simple question. Do you think that this targeted fuel mechanism is a good idea?
It's not. It isn't a good proposal. I mean, it sounds quite attractive because there is a very large subsidy bill at the moment. So the estimate from the Ministry of Finance is that it might be at least 28 billion, if not more than that. So it does sound like a good idea to try to reduce that bill. But the problem with the targeting process is that it raises more problems than it solves. The first issue is that we don't know how to target. We don't know who to target. The proposition, the general proposition, is that we should target people in lower income groups and remove the subsidies from people in higher income groups. But actually, what we really should be doing is targeting the people who need the subsidy and taking it away from people who don't need the subsidy. And that really doesn't have much to do with your income. In fact, you might have quite a lot of people in lower income groups who don't need a subsidy because they don't use petrol or they use much less of it. But then you might have quite a lot of people in a middle income group, for example, who need to use their car, need to use their bike to get to work in the morning, particularly if they're outside of Kuala Lumpur or some of the major cities where there's no real public transport. These guys don't earn a lot of money. They're in the middle or lower income groups, but they do use a lot of petrol because they don't have an alternative. So we need to try to think about who should target it. We don't necessarily have a good idea of how to do that. And looking just at income isn't necessarily the best way of dealing with it. The second big problem is we don't have a mechanism to introduce targeting. When we think about a universal subsidy, it's very easy. Everybody gets the same discount. And you go to the petrol station and the price of the pump has been cut for everyone. So it's very straightforward. When you're trying to target it, you want particular people to get the discount, you want other people not to get the discount. So we need to have a mechanism to work that out, and we don't have a mechanism. An old-fashioned mechanism would be to give people discount tickets or discount vouchers. A more modern approach, of course, would be to give people some sort of digital discounting card. But the fact is, we just don't have it. We don't have it in place. There is one mechanism that could possibly work, and that would be tiered pricing, like we have with electricity, where you would charge a different price according to the amount of petrol that you were buying. But again, I'm not sure that the point of sales operations of most petrol stations have that mechanism in place or that technology in place at the moment.
Dr. Jeffrey Harris here. The fuel subsidy bill still stands at 28 billion ringgit, even with the absence of a mechanism on rolling out this targeted subsidy. How do we solve for this 28 billion bill?
Well, the issue with the 28 billion is this. This is a subsidy that is being paid by the government. If you take it away, then somebody else has to pay it. So if you take it away transferring it to people in the form of a petrol subsidy, all that's going to happen is that people who are using petrol are going to have to find the money to pay for that subsidy. It's not a free lunch, this 28 billion. And if you take it away, it's not that the government will save the 28 billion and then be able to use it on other aspects of government expenditures freely. Somebody's going to have to pay that. So it's a welfare transfer. And The second thing about the 28 billion is that part of it is recovered because Malaysia raises revenue, government revenue in particular, through the sale of petrol. So although it looks like a very large number, and it is a very large number, actually part of that is already there because the government has a subsidy budget. Part of the increase will be covered by the increase in petrol revenue. And that means that Malaysia isn't like other countries, such as Thailand, for example, where they don't necessarily have the hydrocarbon income to cover the cost of the subsidy.
You know, Dr. Jeffrey, I just want to learn more about your thoughts on universal basic income. Do you think that UBI would be the answer then? Do you think that this would be the more direct approach? Put money where the people need it and then up to them to spend however they want.
In the long term, we definitely want to move away from subsidies because subsidies are distorting. So if we look at the petrol subsidy in particular, artificially lowering the price of petrol encourages more and more people to use cars and to use motorbikes. And that's clearly not helpful if you also have a zero carbon target, for example, in the long term. So the subsidy is distorting, and in the long term, we want to move it. We want to remove it. But we have to remove it slowly as prices start to stabilize and prices start to normalize. Now, the other side of the cost of living problem isn't just prices are rising. The other side of the cost of living problem is, of course, what you just mentioned, which is income. So if we can find a way of helping people to raise their income and to raise the earning potential, that will help them to stabilize their spending power, even if prices are rising. The universal basic income is one way of doing that. There were a number of different models of introducing a universal basic income. One that I'm quite keen on is called a negative income tax or a tax credit system. And what happens there is you will set a threshold for the income. If your income falls below that threshold, instead of paying tax to LHDN, you will receive a tax credit. And if your income goes above the threshold, then you will pay taxes in the normal way. This is a very simple, a very straightforward, relatively efficient system of helping people when their income falls below a particular threshold.
Thank you. That was Professor Dr. Jeffrey Williams, economist at MUST. He's also the Provost for Research, Innovation and at the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. We're going to have a full-on conversation on my sister show here on Astrawani called Notepad. Watch our full-on interview, about 30 minutes long, on the targeted fuel subsidy topic that's going to air on Tuesday. Moving along, US President Joe Biden said he was weighing cutting tariffs on Chinese goods while increasing calls on OPEC to raise oil production as he grappled with a politically damaging wave on inflation. The issue here will be discussed with our partner at Asia BizTech, or BizTech Asia, called BizTech Asian Midday Market Watch. This interview was recorded yesterday afternoon with Brian Fernandez, the colleague of ours from BizTech Asia, and his guest, Jeffrey Haley, the senior market analyst of Asia Pacific at Owenda.
Good afternoon and welcome to BizTech's Asian Midday Market Watch, powered by Al Rajhi Bank Malaysia. Now today, Jeffrey Haley, senior market analyst, Asia Pacific or at Owenda, is our guest. Thanks for coming in, Jeff.
Always a pleasure, mate.
Now, let's first take a look at how crypto markets are performing. Bitcoin is at 29,406.9. It's down 2.49%. Ethereum is at 1,992.42. It's down 1.74%. Now, looking across to regional stock markets, we start with the SGX, which is at 3,218.09. It's up 0.14%. In Bursa Malaysia, it's at 1,541.37, it's down 0.08. Shanghai is at 3,108.52, it's down 1.26%. ASX 200 is at 7,396, it's down 0.04%. Japan, the Nikkei is at 26,788, it's down 0.79%. The Hang Seng is at 20,150, it's down 1.56%. Rounding up the numbers, we've got the KOSPI, which is at 2,617.86. It's also down 1.12%. Jeff, it's I was getting a bit tired saying that every market is down. Tell us why.
Look, I think they had a great session overnight in New York, but their behavior in New York has been schizophrenic on the stock market, to say the least. After market hours, Snap came out and gave a fairly negative outlook on their macro environment and their earnings outlook. That saw their stock fall by over, I think, 30% in after hours trading, dragged Meta down with it and some others. That's seen those US futures, particularly the NASDAQ, give back most of its overnight gains. NASDAQ futures are down around 1.5% today. So that would have taken the edge off Asia following US markets higher from the main session overnight. Then this morning, we've also seen JP Morgan, UBS come out and sharply downgrade China GDP growth for this year. So that's turning into a bit of a torrent of financial institutions downgrading China growth. The tinkering stimulus package they brought out last night has been forgotten. And there's also stubborn a number of cases in Beijing, and concerns are rising that there's going to be a much harsher lockdown in Beijing, aka Shanghai. I think those factors, as they have for the last few sessions, the China growth story, that's weighing on sentiment on in Asia today. As you said, China stocks are down quite sharply, and the rest of Asia is either slightly lower or flat. And I think it really is China that is making Asia nervous at the moment.
But this is against a backdrop of the US announcing, Joe Biden announcing that they're considering cutting tariffs on Chinese goods. Now, how will this impact the global economy? Because definitely that's going to impact the US consumer tremendously.
I don't think it's going to be a massive impact on the global economy, because those tariffs are actually paid by the importers to the US government when the actual goods arrive on the shores in the United States. So I think it's more of a US thing. And I think what it will do is actually take the edge off inflation. So I don't think it's going to make inflation go away by any means, but it's one of the steps that the government is clearly looking at taking to try and bring the cost of living down in the United States. And we have to remember there are midterm elections in November, and it's always about the economy.
Okay, itulah dia berita-berita yang kita boleh bawakan pada hari ini.
Betul.
Rates. Dan kalau ada satu lagi berita yang sangat penting, ini breaking news level. Chelsea punya pembelian telah pun diselesaikan. Kita boleh in grafik ni?
Kalau kita nak tengok, yes.
Ini nama dia Fabrizio Romano mengesahkan bahawa pembelian Ted Bowley kepada takeover Chelsea Football Club. Football club yang terbaik dan antara terhebat di dalam dunia seperti mana kita tahu, telah pun diberikan approval oleh UK government ataupun kerajaan United Kingdom, dan ini membolehkan Chelsea untuk terus menakluk dunia. Gitu. Nampak sangat aku Chelsea punya fan.
Luar biasa dia punya wrap up nak tunjuk.
Already breaking, aku dah saya kata dia penyokong Man U lah, Liverpool lah. But anyway,
ramai kat dalam PCR kita ni.
Ramai. Including seluruh director sekali. Dalam jerit-jerit dah kat mana.
Okay.
Payah.
Alright. Dalam perkongsian kita tadi juga banyak cerita berkenaan dengan pelancongan. Kita WEF juga banyak highlights isu-isu pelancongan. Kalau kita tengok grafik ataupun boleh kongsikan di iPad seperti yang saya bentangkan tadi juga, banyak cerita-cerita yang boleh dikatakan nampaknya kurang enak sedikit lah apabila angka kita jatuh. Kita faham because of COVID-19 dan sebagainya, jumlah pelancong pun agak menurun. Tetapi macam mana dua negara, kalau kita tengok daripada bawah tu, Indonesia, Thailand tu, mereka mendahului kita. Kalau ikutkan 2019, Malaysia di depan dalam kalangan negara ASEAN ni. Tetapi sekarang ni Indonesia dan Thailand dah semakin ke hadapan untuk indeks pada tahun 2021. Jadi banyaklah perkara yang perlu.
Banyak perkara, tapi I got two key takeaways. Number one, kita above average. Ya, kita above average. Kalau kita tengok balik kepada tadi, iPad tadi kita tengok
balik.
Purata is 4.0, kita 4.3. Yeah. Tengok kita 4.0 average, kita 4.3. Not that bad. Mm-hmm. In Thailand pun 4.3. Okay, and then nampak tu, besar-besar kita bagi.
Okay.
But I don't know, Haritz. Benda ni dicipta dan ditulis dan dikarang dan dikaji oleh WEF.
Yeah.
Not Asians.
Mm-hmm.
If you look around, Indonesia, Bali, first of all, Indonesia, Thailand, Malaysia, we know these are hotspots, right?
Yeah.
For tourism.
Tourism, betul.
Entah macam mana, we are ranked lower. So I take this with a pinch of salt, but I take this with a pinch of salt, but at the same time, I take this with a positivity that 2022 is going to be a big deal.
Yes.
Now, the question now is, how do we go forward from this? Sebab aku baru je balik daripada Melaka.
Hari tu.
Cuti-cuti.
Hujung minggu lah. Short,
jumpa keluarga short besar, keluarga Haji Babu dekat Jasin Melaka. And I think that the Jonker Street was full. The streets were full.
Yeah.
Domestic tourists all the way.
Domestic, yep.
But this is a positive for Malaysia for 2022. Yeah. So I'm not too concerned about the graph just now.
Tapi itu tadi 2021. Kita mengharapkan 2022 lebih baik.
Kencang.
Kencang.
Macam
lebih
Chelsea.
Lebih rancak.
Yes, sir.
Lebih rancak pelancongan Malaysia dan dapat meningkatkan indeks ini untuk tahun 2022. Dan sekian sahaja niaga awani untuk waktu ini. Saya Haris Ashraf Aslan.
Saya Ibrahim Zani.
Salam hormat.